This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Almost 48 hours on from City's dramatic draw at Anfield, we asked the question, was it 2 points dropped or 1 point gained? Plus, how will Ederson's injury impact the Blues going forward? It's Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Alex Michelle.
I'm Lee Bardsley.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Oh, yes. Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Joining me today is the dynamic duo of Luke Bardsley and Alex Michelle. Luke, we're a couple days on now from the events at Anfield. We got the hot takes from Amos, Ali, and Joe yesterday. So if you haven't gone back and listened to that episode, go back after this one, listen to that for the immediate emotional reaction from the post-Liverpool fallout. We've seen the social media takes. I've sent my own fair share. Where's your head at now that we're a few days later and the dust has settled?
Yeah, with this, it's going to be a lot calmer episode, I think, compared to one yesterday, which was a fantastic episode. I will, if you haven't listened to it yet, make sure you go back and listen to it. For me, it feels like 2 points lost. I was going into the game fairly confident, fairly kind of just saying I'm certain we're going to win. I was confident in the squad. I was confident we had a better team than them. Confident in that we'd have had the right approach, and it felt like two points loss for me. I understand in hindsight it could be great for the end of the season, getting that point away at Anfield is something we dream of year and year and year. But for me, the immediate reaction is we should have won the game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, going into the game with all of the circumstances surrounding, you know, all of the external factors looked like it was in City's favor. You had obviously an injury hit Liverpool team that had to play a Thursday night game. City played earlier in the week. They were able to rest loads of players with the state of the Copenhagen tie. And coming into it, it felt like, okay, it's Klopp and Guardiola for the final time at Anfield, potentially. This finally has the making of going in there and getting one of those kind of famous victories, which I know it's crazy to say that any victory that City earns is famous, but it probably would be, just at least for us as fans and for the club, given our history there. But it was Anfield. It was Liverpool away in a crunch Premier League game. We know how those goes. And obviously, on yesterday's episode, the lads got into a bit of an argument of whether red seats can actually change the complexion of a game. But what was your overall take? Did City kind of capitulate? Was it a game of two halves, or was it kind of exactly what you would expect?
I think I have to say one thing first, which I haven't really heard many City fans say, which is that Liverpool just outplayed us. I think it's almost as simple as that. I think they deserved to come away with the result there, and at least a draw for them. And I think the biggest thing, which I'm completely with Luke in the sense that I was completely optimistic going into this, you look at their squad, you look at where we were at, it just felt like this was the moment to sort of, you know, break that barrier and finally get the 3 points at Anfield. And it didn't happen in the end. And I think one of the main reasons for that was because the players that were stepping up for Liverpool actually stepped up. It took them about 15 or 20 minutes to get into the game. And I think from a City perspective, it felt like we had the control the first 15, 20 minutes of the game. I was sitting back on my couch, super relaxed, smiling, just, oh, this is going to be a walk in the park. This is going to be great, isn't it? And then all of a sudden, a switch flips. And whatever it is, whatever you want to put it down to, we just sort of lost the control there. And I think I have to put that more on them disrupting what we wanted to do more than City failing to do that in any way.
Yeah, I want to keep going on that topic, because on yesterday's episode, Ollie Kirsch was kind of lamenting City's what seemed like a decision to sit off after the goal, when in reality, City didn't really sit off, did they? They were forced to sit into their own half because of Liverpool stepping up their press and keeping City pinned down there. And a number of factors like Julian Alvarez, who will come on to, City weren't able to break that press like they normally do. So I want to stay with you, Alex, because was there a conscious decision from City in that moment to, okay, we have this lead, we've had control, we can take our foot off the gas a little bit? Or was it really just that Liverpool woke up from the goal and said, okay, actually, we need to wrestle back some of the control here?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think they sort of happened at the same time. And that's sort of the recipe for disaster. There is 100% a psychological change that happens once you go 1-0 up and once you feel like you have that control in the game. And I don't want to say that City took their foot off the gas, because I don't think we did. I don't think there was a conscious effort there to sort of reserve the play and step off a little bit. But naturally, I think it happens. And when you open that door just an inch for Liverpool at Anfield, they're able to sort of grab things. And they made some slight tweaks, they made some changes, and they were able to get their foot in that door. And from that point forward, they just sort of barged into the room.
Luke, are you one for the quote-unquote Anfield curse? Can red seats change the complexion of a game? Or was it simply that the 11 men in red shirts did better than the 11 men in blue shirts?
I think it just it factors a lot of things. The atmosphere, of course, yeah, everyone raves about it. Anfield is great for big games. It's a myth for non-big games, but we won't get into that one. But it's a case of, I feel like it gets into Pep's head a little bit, like the big games does. Like, for example, the Champions League final did. He always has to find a way to combat the opponent rather than just play our game and play the players who, basically the best players in the best position. I think it was Amos who said it in our group chat during the game, where he just said, I just love us to play the best players in the best positions at Anfield. And we would have won that easily, and I'm certain of it. I don't think the team was correct. Wasn't a bad team, but it's a case of a matter of, I just wish that we could have just gone out, played Kovacic from the start, controlled the game. And albeit Liverpool did have a good game, there was a few players out there that really struck out to me. Bradley, very good. Joe Gomez, I thought, quick, strong, really combated City quite well. But I just feel like we're better than them. And it's frustrating. It's frustration, the feeling I've got after the game, personally, for me, Adam. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that every time we escape Anfield having not lost, I think it's worth celebrating. But it was the complexion of the game being one where City felt like they had taken control in a way that we haven't seen them do much at Anfield during the Pep era. And then for it to swing, and for it to swing on a moment like the Ake back pass, which led to Ederson coming out and kicking Nunez all the way to the cop. That's the most frustrating part, is very rarely do we see City lose composure and have these massive bonehead moments, but that was what swung it. Alex, I'll come to you, because I know you're itching to have a go at Luke's take on the lineup. And obviously there's been plenty of takes on social media in the past 48 hours, given We saw Julian Alvarez start out on the wing, which we haven't seen much of. And there were some questions about whether or not that was the right choice from Pep. And obviously we saw Kovacic come on later in the game, and that seemed to change things. But as our resident predicted 11s man, what was the percentage chance you had going into the game of Julian Alvarez playing on the left wing?
I predicted him to start there, and I had it at around a 35 or 40% chance, I believe.
Out wide?
Yeah. I predicted him to start off the left wing. And let me give the reason for that. So
you're to blame, essentially, is what you're saying.
No, I take issue with what Luke was just getting at. And it's not just Luke. It's, as he said, Amos said the same thing on yesterday's pod. We've seen it all throughout social media. The issue that I have with this is that, first of all, Jack Grealish is injured. We know that. There's not a set front six for this team. It's five plus one at the moment. And that one could be Alvarez, it could be Doku, it could be Kovacic, it could be whoever. For this match, my takeaway going into it, with the help of discussing with some friends, was that when you look at the selection last weekend, when we played United, I was expecting Kovacic or Alvarez to play that game and Foden to start off the left. And Foden ended up starting off the right, because that was where United's weakness was. Because Lindelof was playing there. They didn't have a natural defender there. Foden was the sort of first priority for Pep. And we've seen that. We can talk about the De Bruyne sub again. Foden is sort of City's top priority at the moment. And entering this match, I don't know whether Pep expected Gomez to start over Robertson at left back. I certainly didn't. If Robertson had started, that is their weakness, to get in behind Robertson, and then you drift Van Dijk over to the left side and you switch the play back over to City's left, Liverpool's right. So I expected Foden to start off the right because I thought that, and I think Pep thought that was where Liverpool's weaknesses lied. And if you start Foden off the right and you don't have Grealish, Doku, or Nunes to start there, assuming the latter two weren't available to start, who else starts off the left? You don't have many other options, and Julian Alvarez is pretty much the only one. And I think that's also the reason why Pep started Julian Alvarez out wide against Copenhagen midweek. He played on the left wing midweek. I don't think that was by any stretch of the imagination a coincidence. I think that was planning from Pep, and it's just a sense that if you're starting Foden off the right, there was no space for Kovacic in the 11 because you have to put Bernardo or KDB off the left.
To play devil's advocate, though, Julian Alvarez hasn't played on the left rarely, if ever. And I mean truly hugging the touchline in the way that he did. There's been times where he's, you know, played centrally and kind of drifted out wide to pick up those positions and link up with whether it's Grealish or Doku or whoever, especially in the absence of Kevin De Bruyne. But this feels like the wrong occasion to essentially experiment. And I'm not necessarily saying that Pep didn't think it was, you know, that Pep had any sort of inclination that it would go as poorly as it did. But I'd rather see at Anfield in this game where we know going into it the way that City have capitulated at that stadium time after time after time, that if they get a little bit of what, you know, what Pep called the tsunami, if that tsunami starts coming, the waves never stop. I would have liked to see maybe a more conservative option there if we're going to experiment, and maybe you have to put Bernardo out wide and, you know, stick Kovacic in centrally where Bernardo was. But I think it just felt like a weird time to do something we've essentially never seen up to this point.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree there, but I think it just leads into you're going to find an excuse one way or another, where I think if we had gone with an 11 where Foden's playing off the left, everyone's complaining about Foden playing off the left at that point, because that's, I think people would argue, probably his worst out of the three primary positions, whether it's through the center, off the right, or off the left. I think people would put off the left sort of down near the bottom of the totem pole. And I think Connor Bradley probably would have had the better of him had that happened. And we would have just been running into different issues and pointing fingers at different things.
But what's worse, and I don't mean to just totally pick on you here, I know that there will be people like me and listeners on social media that will be screaming at their car stereos right now. What's worse, slightly muting Phil Foden's ability or putting someone out there that has the potential and showed that potential to be essentially catastrophic?
Well, I think there are still downsides to Kovacic starting. And I think that's what a lot of people sort of overlook, is you can look at the benefits that he adds in terms of midfield security. But let's also not breeze over the point that he is pretty damn terrible in the final third, where in the first 20 minutes of the game or so, when we did have that element of control and things were going right, a lot of the sort of positive passages of play happened because of Julian Alvarez and Bernardo Silva linking up on that left side. There was the one chipped ball to the back post where Bernardo made the underlapping run. Julian plays him in the sort of diagonal ball into the edge of the box, and then he chips it to the back post, and Holland's waiting, and Van Dijk just gets his head on it and gets it away. There were some very, very positive moments that happened because of that setup, and we also know that Pep loves to have this sort of right-footed winger on the left with a left-footed sort of interior floating around them, so that we see with Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden on the right side, he wants to replicate that whenever he can, and that was the exact dynamic he got here. For me, it was more a case that there came a point where we weren't able to get in those positions, and I think that's the point where Kovacic would have helped, where, you know, the sort of first stages of the buildup you need to achieve in order to allow your final third players to take over. And there was a point where we didn't achieve even those first parts, and then at that point, okay, you can turn around and say Kovacic is needed.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. All of this comes back to the major domino effect that happens when you lose Jack Grealish. Especially ahead of games like this. I want to move on real quick before we take a break, Luke, and talk about Ederson, because obviously we kind of feared for the worst when he had to come off and was replaced by Ortega after kicking Nunes. We've heard now it could be up to a month that he's out, which would put him potentially landing back around that Arsenal game, but it's probably not going to be back in time for that. That's kind of best case scenario. How big of a drop-off is this? Because I've seen some conflicting opinions online and in the group chats and with my other City supporting friends. You know, some people obviously say, well, look at Ortega, look at how well he did when he came on. He was excellent, especially in the shot-stopping department, which is the goalkeeper's main role. We've seen him play, you know, we played in the cup final against United. But surely there is a drop-off from what I would say is one of the most important signings of the Pep Guardiola era, a guy that kind of sets the tempo all the way from back lower than the penalty spot. You know, that is going to be a drop-off.
I agree. I want to preface this by saying I love Stefan Ortega. I think he's a great goalkeeper, and he would get into majority of European sides. I think he'd walk into him.
Well, he doesn't need to walk into them because he's had plenty of cars sold to him.
Yeah, that's a very valid point, especially in the middle of Manchester Town Centre, where a lot of lads like to sing that song to him. But it's more of a case of, like, I think Kyle Walker explained it perfectly in the podcast, where I'm not going to say my opinion on him doing that podcast, but he explained it perfectly when he was talking about Pep's idea is you can't go man-to-man with a team that plays with 11 players, including a goalkeeper. Because before Pep came along, the goalkeeper was literally seen as a guy to save the goal, basically, to save shots. Whereas we use Ederson as our man. He steps up, he plays as like a roaming sort of centre-half at some points. Like, it's great for ball retention, it's great for creating space. And Ortega doesn't have the ability that Ederson has. And no goalkeeper has, like, That's a fact of it. And we saw it when he came on in the second half, where he was trying to play these chips into Rodri, he's trying to play these chips into the midfield, and he was misplacing his passes, which is fair enough, is what you would expect. But it's a massive, massive, massive miss for us, because Ederson, as you said, he's just so important and integral to how we play. The fact of he could pick out any man within 80 yards. Like, who can kick a ball as far as him? It's a joke what he can do. And I think we're really going to miss him, especially when we're playing at home. Because when we're playing at home and we're having the ball for long periods of time, we're trying to create the space, really. Not having Ederson there could really bite us in the backside a little bit, I think.
Yeah, Alex, I mean, not many teams in Europe or probably in world football are blessed enough to have somebody like Stefan Ortega step in when your number one goes down. But like Luke said, you know, for what he gives you in the buildup and with the ball at his feet, that's essentially irreplaceable with any keeper in the world.
100%. Yeah, there will certainly have to be at least slight change in approach as to how we build up from the back and how we approach things there in whatever games Ederson misses in the near future. And I think Ortega is sort of as good as you could hope for in terms of a backup keeper, as Luke just said. You know, all praise should go to him. But yeah, Ederson, in a similar way to Jack Grealish, should not be sort of overlooked in what they add to the squad. And when you lose those, it's sort of a case of, you know, you don't know what you have until you lose it.
All right, I'm going to ask you both. In this hypothetical world where City have a 100% chance of winning the Premier League with Ederson fully fit, what percent chance do they have now if Ortega plays the next month?
Oh, Jesus. Do you know what? I'm still going to say 75%. I think I would still back us. I feel like, but I know we've got a hard run of games. I am aware of that. But I just feel like we have the capability and the mentality that other teams possibly don't. That comes with A, experience, and B, just pure talent. We are the most talented squad in the league, and I stand by that. And I still think we've got a 75% chance of us winning the league.
I would say 50, and that more so comes down to not the specific drop-off between the two, because I think in general, for what Ortega lacks with the ball at his feet, he gains in terms of his shot-stopping ability. But it's more so the particular matchups that we're up against next in terms of Arsenal and Villa in particular. They are going to press the hell out of us. They're going to be on our necks and breathing down our backs. And unless Pep and the staff can come up with an approach to circumvent that, I think that is really a weakness for us in the near future.
If only there was a big Norwegian you could lump the ball up to when you're under pressure. If we had that option, everything would be all right. That'll do for part one. Stay right where you are. We'll be back in a moment after this quick break.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. That is the best way for us to get this show out to more blues like you. Luke, we have to come on to the unfortunate topic of City in clashes with the Big Six this season. Now, this is something that has come up all across social media since Anfield. Football on TNT Sports says City have only beaten one Big Six side in the Premier League so far this season. That was, of course, doing the double over United, but have failed to beat Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Spurs up to this point. Obviously, games against Arsenal and Spurs are still to come, so you can rectify that record. But in those games, City have conceded 12 goals, and that's in 8 games. What is it about these big games that City can't seem to wrestle any sort of control and get the results that they need? Now, look, I don't think City's record, especially away from home against the Big Six last year, was anything, you know, to write home about either, and they go on to win the treble. But is this any sort of issue?
I mean, let's start with the positives. I'm a positive guy. I'm probably one of the most positive Man City fans that people know. We're not losing them, which is a positive. We've only lost one out of the games that we've mentioned. We've only lost one, which is a big positive. The problem we've got is we're getting ourselves into positions where we look like we should go on to win. Like we're slipping up. I know that Liverpool fans won't like me saying that word after what's happened in the past. But yeah, we keep slipping up in these games, which is a little bit concerning. I want to use the word concerning because it's not dramatic. It's nothing that can't be solved. It's just a little bit concerning. Our team starting to figure out how to play against us, maybe. I think that's also starting to play a factor in there. Maybe they're starting to adopt, obviously, with Pep's tactics and the players that we have missed. I do want to just come back to it. I do think it's a case of our team isn't as good as the team we had last year. And I firmly believe that. With the miss of Gundogan, the miss of Mahrez, the miss of Laporte, all these players that we are missing out on, we aren't as good. We're in a little bit of a transitional phase, but the fact that we're not losing these games, I think we have to take real positivity in that.
Alex, I think the most frustrating thing for me is when you look back at the games individually, they all felt winnable and City shot themselves in the foot repeatedly. You know, I think back to Stamford Bridge and Ruben Diaz goes sliding into a Chelsea player in stoppage time in the box. And, you know, I think back to the Liverpool game where City had plenty of chances to kill off that game. And then, you know, a moment of magic from Trent Alexander-Arnold snatches them a point. You've got the game against Spurs where it was in that weird little patch where City seemed to think that Jeremy Doku was the second coming of Jesus Christ and he was the only man that could touch the ball for 90 minutes. and when I look back at those games, I think, God, if you were in full flow and you had, you know, a fully fit and firing squad, you probably win a couple of those games.
Yeah, let's also not forget Nathan Ake getting posterized by Dejan Kulusevski, of all people. But yeah, I think there is certainly an issue at play here. And I want to bring something up and maybe change the conversation slightly just to something that folds into this. And I'm curious to get your guys' perspective on this, because for me, I agree in the sense that, you know, we haven't done as poorly as it feels like we have. You know, it feels for a lot of City fans like the world is falling down almost, especially at some points this season. But then you look back at the results and we've only conceded more than 2 goals twice this season, once to Chelsea, once to Spurs. And for me, the bigger issue at play is that there isn't necessarily, and it's something that Luke hinted at there with the transition phase sort of things, we don't have, it doesn't feel like we have a consistent identity to rely on. Whereas you look across at Arsenal, they play more or less the same week in, week out. You look across at Liverpool, they play more or less the same week in, week out. And whether you want to put it down to the summer window and the departures and the incomings, whether you want to put it down to specific players such as Jeremy Doku and the sort of contrast between him and Jack Grealish, whether you want to put it down to Pep's sort of perverseness to continue to quote-unquote force these sort of tactical setups like Alvarez in midfield, whatever it may be, at a certain point for me, it feels like we've lost something this season, where last season towards the end, we had this very, very clear sort of ethos about how we play, that it was sort of physically dominant. We had a very, very rigid structure. And all that led into, you know, very, very clear patterns. We played consistently time and time again. And this season, Pep has sort of made things too complex to a point where we've lost a lot of that. And so what I'm curious to hear from you two is, do you sense that as well? And then also, do you think in terms of, because there's still the issue that we have a lot of games to go this season, or a lot of crucial games, do you think it's a matter of sort of reverting back to where we were at the end of last season and sort of relying on that? Or do we have to sort of push through and just, you know, I don't know, sort of suffer through these changes that Pep is making like it is a transition phase?
Yeah, it's interesting. And one thing that I think is a bit worrying when I look back on pivotal moments in this season, you know, I look back on the Crystal Palace game in which you give up a 2-goal lead, one of which was like a 97th minute penalty, a really boneheaded play from Phil Foden in the box. And it feels like City have lost a bit of their ruthlessness this season. It felt like that treble winning team could sniff blood in the water and they would absolutely smother you. If they felt like they could get on top of you, that's it. You're done for 90 minutes. I don't feel that way anymore. I always have the feeling, and look, it's crazy to say this when City are essentially in pole position to do a double treble, and they still very, very well might do that. But I don't have that feeling at the moment that if they get on top of somebody, that's it. I always feel like the opponent, no matter the level of the opponent, has a way back into the game. Whether that's FC Copenhagen at home when you're 3-1 up on aggregate, or it's Liverpool away, I always feel like there's going to be some weird little slip up. They're going to switch off for a moment and they're going to allow the team back into the game. Luke, I don't know if you have that same feeling, but it felt like last season, especially in those big Champions League games, especially in the title run in when we had, you know, Arsenal at home and the games like that, that once City got a little bit of sniff of the blood in the water and it felt like they could smother you, bang, over. But I haven't seen that much this season.
I can't agree with you anymore, you two. I've mentioned this game because it's probably my favourite City game of all time, is the Real Madrid home game, where we absolutely, and it was a case of we could have scored two goals and then just sat off and just been scared. But we know we were ruthless. We went right at them and we battered them. Whereas this, like, we had the first 10 minutes at Anfield, we were fantastic. I thought it's one of the best 10 minutes of football we played in a while. Like, we were really, really good. And then between 10 and 20 minutes, we just look like a different team playing. And it's such a weird feeling to have, where we've got these massive riches. We've got these great players who play amazing football. But in the back of our mind, we know that we're so close to just falling apart. Like, we played into Liverpool's hands a little bit as well, where we let them counter-attack and use their pace. Like, Diaz, just, if he had had his shooting boots on, he should have scored 4 goals. Harvey Elliott's another one where he had a great game. And I felt like we just let them grow into the game. And that's not what City did last year. We didn't let anyone grow into the game. We just saw the threat, sniffed it out, and just made it as small as possible. And is it a mentality thing? Is it to be expected winning a treble? Like, there's a reason why clubs don't, well, apart from the freaks like Real Madrid who won the Champions League 4 years in a row, there's a reason why teams don't win, because you need to constantly change, you need to constantly evolve to keep the mindset fresh. Maybe that's a factor in there, but yeah, we're not as good as last year, and I think we just need to accept it now, don't we?
Last season, Alex, City were, I think, 8 points back at this same time last season. Obviously, they're only a point back right now. However, you were on the show 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were having the conversation that last season City had that really stale period between January and February, when we just kind of broke into that Rico Lewis stepping into midfield, and that evolved into playing 4 center backs and John Stones stepping into midfield, and that you know, amalgamized into being the treble winning team that we know and love. And you told me 2 or 3 weeks ago, you said, it seems like the identity is starting to be formed. Is that identity here yet? Is it in the room with us now?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up as well, because I have given Pep a lot of leeway so far this season because of just that. Because with the way...
I'm sure he thanks you for that, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. On his burner, looking at my account, just liking everything. But no, because with this, with the way the season goes, you need to be able to peak at the right time. And this game was the start of that peak, sort of. I mean, you could say it's United, but I think we could have put any lineup out of United and we probably would have came away with 3 points, you know? For me, this was the first big test. And I gave Pep a lot of room because I do think that the idea to sort of stretch beyond where we finished last season and to add in more complexity, in theory, is a really, really solid plan to continue to push the squad, because you can't always rely on the same thing. Football continues to move fast, but I've reached a point where I still am sort of along with the idea, but I do think that Pep has tried to do too much too quickly, and we've reached a point where I still do stand by that sentiment that I said back then about what Pep is trying to do, but now seeing it not come to fruition in these big moments, and again, I'm still going to give him a bit of leeway and see what happens against Arsenal, I just am being a bit let down already, as many people are already fully let down, that we aren't reaching those heights this season. And maybe I have to personally come to terms with that this sort of concept in theory is not going to, you know, be applicable in practice, and it's just not going to lead to the same amount of success, and maybe less is more in this case. But I don't know. I'm just super conflicted right now, because on one hand, I can envision what Pep is trying to do, and on the other hand, none of that is really coming into fruition, and we're not seeing a sort of fully galvanized City team.
Luke, let's end on a positive note, because I feel like this has been too dour for a team that are 1 point off the top, which, look, as the host and the agenda setter, that's probably my fault. But City have been in a far worse position in probably 3 of the last 4 seasons at this time, especially in the title races. But they're 1 point off the top, and they're in the FA Cup quarterfinal and they're in the Champions League quarterfinal. You can't really complain all that much if you're working out the kinks and still kind of on your way to reaching the heights you want to reach.
I mean, I'm going to back us winning another treble until we mathematically can't do it. And I stand by it. I just think we have so much talent that we just need to click into gear. I thought that Luton game was going to be the one where we're going to be like, right, this is now us. We are now going to kick on. And fortunately, it hasn't quite happened. But then again, that's football. We are. I mean, the Premier League's just got so much talent nowadays. That's just the fact of the matter. Like, look at Arsenal's team. It is unbelievably good. If they had a number nine, Jesus, they're scary. Look at Liverpool's side. They've got stupid players and they've got about eight missing. Like, teams are really good in England at the moment in time. We do need to take our pinch of salt. I still make us favourite for the Champions League. 100% make us favourite for that. I think Premier League, probably second favourite now for me.
Behind?
Behind Liverpool, I think. I can't see Arsenal beating us at our place. Like, we know what Arsenal are like. We know what happens when they get a little bit of pressure put on them. They start to
Arsenal,
panic.
Arsenal away ginger. At most big six stadiums is what we are at Anfield.
Yeah, that's a valid, valid point. But do you know what? I'm excited. I'm really, as a football fan as well, and as a match-going fan, I'm so excited to watch Declan Rice play against us. I know it sounds mental, but I'm so excited to watch him. Like, I watched Virgil van Dijk yesterday intensely against us, and he's sublime. Like, the way he reads a game, the way he intercepts passing, the way he just sniffs out a threat before it's even a threat is stupidly good, stupidly good. And I'm really excited to watch Declan Rice play against us. I think it's going to be a great battle between two of the best sixes in world football. I've said it on camera. Clip it up if you want to. I don't care. Put it on TikTok. I think they're the two best sixes in world football, and I'm excited to watch it. And I make us favourites in that game, and I can't wait to go and smash them 5-0. I can say some nasty things to an Arsenal fan in the stadium, and we'll go on and win the league.
Perfect. We'll leave it on that note. Alex, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Always a pleasure.
Luke, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Been a pleasure.
Listeners, thank you very much. This has been the City Report podcast, where our success means more. Until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.